You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 280. This week, we talk about Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur, BFF. Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
Jen, did you see Rogue One yet?
No. I don't know if we're going to catch it in the theater here.
There's only one or two scenes that are like hugely cinematic that you're going to miss out watching it on the movie theater, I'd say.
Yeah, I want to see it. It's just going to movies here is like, it's really different. The theaters are tiny. And a lot of them have, like, assigned seating.
Yeah.
And it's just a weird thing to navigate in German when you don't speak German.
That's true, too.
I feel like I've kind of passed the statute of limitations on spoilers. So if you guys want to talk about it, like,
I cannot stop you. It's still in the movie theaters. That's not past the... No.
No, I'm not. I just wanted to know if you had seen it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really excited to rent it, which is the saddest thing that I have ever said.
No, but it's good, because then you can get the English track on it, too. You're right. Like, then you're going to have to go and, like, see it in German.
Oh, well, they do have English movie theaters here. It's okay. Just, they're, like, so tiny. And so we went and actually saw we saw Fantastic Beasts.
I like that. I really enjoyed that movie.
That movie was so fun. I loved it. We saw it last year, and, like, there's several theaters that play it, but, like, one showing was, like, a kid's showing where it's, like, expect children age 2 and up in this movie. And it, like, warned you of that. And it's like, can we even go if we don't bring kids? And then, the other one is at, like, this tiny theater next to the Deutsches Museum, and they're also the theater where they do, like, the live Rocky Horror production every week. So, like, the selection of English movie theaters is small, and we got there. They have seats, like, the normal movie theater seats, but imagine, like, half of a small AMC, or, like, less than that. And then there's also seats, like, up the side rows. Like, they're installed. They're not, like, folding chairs or anything. But, like, you're diagonal at the very edge of the screen. And we ended up going to that because I guess you go to a movie here and you wait in line for, like, 2 hours to get a good seat. So it's an experience. Like, going to a German movie theater is something I'm glad I did, but I don't know if I'm doing it again.
Yeah, that's really different.
That. Yeah, we're going to do a Fantastic Beasts. We're just going to rent it, because for us, too, it's like, it's not just like being able to get out with a kid, because we don't have a babysitter who knows the night routine, because our night routine was really involved up until like a couple days ago. We're doing sleep training right now, so if she wakes up and crying, I'm going to have to go in there. But like, it's not worth going to a movie, because then we got to pay a babysitter, too, and it's like 3 hours for babysitting is going to be like $60, and I don't want to pay that much for a movie. I'd rather get a DVD, and we have, like, a projector set up here at home, so, like, we'll watch it on our 120-inch TV. It's fine.
Yeah, you have, like, the ability to actually watch it, like, on a big screen, too, which is, that helps. But, I cannot wait to rent it for Rogue One. That's where I stand.
I'm pretty sure K2SO is going to be your new favorite droid ever. One of your new favorite Star Wars characters.
He's okay. I don't want to hype
him too much, but he's fantastic.
I watched an interview with Alan Tudyk talking about when he, you know, filming K2SO, because they did motion capture. He's not, like, in a costume or anything. Yeah. And he said he talked to Anthony Daniels, and Anthony Daniels was like, so you're not in a costume? And he was like, Alan Tudyk was like, no. And basically Anthony Daniels told him to like F off because he was mad that he doesn't.
Dude.
Like jokingly.
Yeah, but that C-3PO suit has to really fucking suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no fucking way that's going to be nice.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, God. And the poor guy that was an R2-D2, too. That can't have been a whole lot better.
Nope.
Well, do you guys want to talk about this week's comic?
Sure.
Sure.
This week's comic.
All right. This week is the start of our Best of 2016 series, and we read Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur, written by Amy Reeder. This volume collects the first six issues. Yeah, first six issues. Yep. With art by Brandon Montclair. No, Brandon Montclair and Amy Reeder were the authors. Penciler was Natasha Bustos? Yeah. Bustos. Bustos. It's fun to say. So there's Marvel's headline titles are usually okay to mediocre. Some are good, especially when they put on like an all-star team. Where you get most of the interesting stuff from Marvel is like the bottom of the catalog things. Like Mockingbird was really well revered, and we almost did that one. Doctor Strange didn't sell really well, but it was really well accepted. And this book didn't sell too great either, but got really good reviews. And it's such an interesting thing that goes on with Marvel, and I like that they kind of embrace it a little bit, it feels like. Because this book doesn't sell too great, but it's still an ongoing, and I think they see its place and see that it's a good book and aren't willing to get rid of it because they know what it is and what they have. And I like that so much, that you're just willing to, like, I know this is good, so I'm not going to destroy it. Like, if Fox had just kept Firefly. Like, being able to recognize good work and keep it going, even if it's not good today. Have faith that it's good work, it will gain traction, and it will get that following, and it'll pay off. And I don't know if this is paying off now, I just know this first trade, when it was coming out, was like, I don't know about Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur, it's kind of weird. But I'm glad they did it, because I'm reading all this shit on Marvel Unlimited. This is great. I had a fun tell time reading this.
I think probably the reason why stuff like this doesn't sell that well is people who buy comics.
Wolverine on the cover?
Well, I think, yes, in a way, that is what I think that's the reason why people are, you know, they buy their favorites. That's the thing with comics. I think people tend to buy their, like, buy their favorite character. And so that ends up, you know, that what ends up happening is small or new characters like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur don't necessarily get, they don't have the, like, I guess, curb appeal, for lack of a better term, that like the Avengers do. Because everybody knows the Avengers, and, you know, people like their Avenger, they have their favorite character, and the X-Men are the same way. But Moon Girl is like a new character, right? And when's the last time I remember seeing Devil Dinosaur was in Agents of Hate, Next Wave.
Oh yeah,
with the where at the end, remember he was like in the smoking jacket.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Oh my God, oh, you're right.
And that wasn't even the real Devil Dinosaur.
Devil Dinosaur was new.
No, he's the, so originally it was Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur.
Oh.
And that was like, you know, Moon Boy was the, I guess he died like in the first issue. I don't know. He was trying to,
he got like wrecked.
Yeah. So Moon Boy was the original character with Devil Dinosaur. And he's one of those characters that just like fell away over time because it's overshadowed by stuff like the Avengers or, you know, that's how it goes with any kind of media like this. But, yeah.
So I think part of this is, like, maybe an issue with marketing, too. Because, obviously a good comic should be read by anyone and they can enjoy it. Like, that's kind of definitionally a good comic. And I do think this is good. But on the other hand, you know, a story featuring a really young girl, she's only 9, and a dinosaur, it's a little, it's kind of one of those things where it almost seems like they would normally be selling it in their lineup targeted at younger kids. But this is just in, like, the standard Marvel lineup. It's not, like, I don't know if you would find this, and I can't confirm because I haven't been to a comic book shop in a long ass time. But, like, you know how they all have, like, that rack of, like, here is the Marvel stuff for kids. Yeah, and I don't know if you'd find that here. Because it seems like it's targeted to adults.
Yeah, this is, when I go to the comic book store, it's usually just, you know, on the shelf with all the other new Marvel releases.
Yeah, and...
Go.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, for me, like, if I walked into a store knowing nothing about this, I might be like, oh, dinosaurs, that's awesome, but small children, I don't know how that's going to go. So...
Yeah, I think this, it's... This comic's definitely an oddity in Marvel's lineup. I think if this was from a smaller publisher, like maybe Image, they were doing a comic with about a little girl and a dinosaur, it would probably pick up traction in a different way, because these kinds of like off outside of the norm comics are the norm at the other smaller outside of the big two publishers.
Yeah, and this, I think this is in an awkward place for Marvel in terms of targeted audience. I think this is a transitional comic. Like, if you've been reading that kids section and you want to move over to the adult section, this is a perfect one for you. Because if you like the Avengers, all that kind of stuff, but, you know, you want something a little bit more, this gets you into the bigger, quote-unquote, real world, where Amadeus Cho is Hulk. Because in the kids' books, it's probably Bruce Banner still. So this kind of slides you into the continuity of the Marvel Universe as it is, nice and friendly for kids. But I also think by the same token, it has to be only transitionally. I have a niece who is 8 who would love this character and would love Devil Dinosaur and I think would really enjoy this book. But I also know if I gave it to her and she's at the level she can read this, the barrier is what is Terrigen? What is an Inhuman? Why is Hulk not Bruce Banner? That might not matter so much, I guess, but it's like one of the main plot points is that she has the Inhuman gene and she's afraid of the Terrigen Mist. And this comic explains that, but explains it in a way that either you already kind of understand it or you're an adult and you can figure it out as you read. If I give this comic to an 8-year-old, she ain't gonna figure that shit out on her own. And that makes it like, on the one hand, I really want to give this book to my niece because I know she would love the shit out of Lunella and she would love the shit out of the fact that she, you know, makes awesome inventions out of fucking toys and stuff. And she would love this character and love this book, but I think there's too much of a barrier and she would just be confused and frustrated while she was reading it. So It's interesting. It's a great book targeted to that age range, but you kind of already have to be in the universe a little bit, which is difficult when you're 8.
Yeah, and I mean, if we want to talk about, like, young adult literature, this is written, I think, I would say, like, at a mid-grade level, which I think usually means, like, a reading level where you'd really understand what's going on around the time you're, like, maybe 12 or a little older than that. And Lunella's, like, just under that age threshold. So I'm trying to think back to, like, 12-year-old Jen. And I don't know if 12-year-old Jen, you know, would want to read about someone younger, right? Because you're just like creeping into adolescence at that point and your interests start changing. That's obviously true. You know that there's some kids who will read whatever and be happy, but it's just, I think that's a really good way to put it. This is at an awkward phase in terms of like who is capable of reading it and who it's about and where that meets. But I don't know, like, as an adult, I love this. I thought this was really well done.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, we talked for a little bit about how this is an introduction for a new character. I want to kind of circle back to that. Because it is unique that this is a cold open for a new character. This does not happen very often. Normally, I think you get things like Kamala Khan, who inherits a legacy name as Ms. Marvel, because Carol Danvers became Captain Marvel, so that name Ms. Marvel was just kind of lying about, and she took it on as her own. And so she can take over an established title, and the character could be completely different, but you get that fan base a little bit, because this is now part of that family of this legacy. And I think that's much more prevalent in DC. DC does that more often, and does it, I think, better than Marvel does. But what Marvel does better is the team books. And you can slide in a new character on a team and introduce them that way. And the one that comes to my mind is Miss America Chavez and the Young Avengers. The Young Avengers introduced a lot of new characters. But they did it under the banner of being Avengers. And there were some people there that you maybe recognized before a little bit, like Kate Bishop. For this kind of cold open, it like never happens in comics these days. And it's interesting how you choose to make that transition. I think Amadeus Cho shows up here because he's a logical character to come into this comic in terms of being powerful and super intelligent. Like when I first saw him, I was like, oh, thank God it's Amadeus. He will understand. And then he doesn't. And it's really frustrating as a reader. He makes sense, but it's also like Totally Awesome Hulk was brand new and going pretty well. And Amadeus Cho is popular. So it's the whole put Wolverine on the cover kind of thing, but with a character that makes more sense. But even that was a little ways in. You kind of have to buy into this character before then to really care and know why Amadeus Cho makes sense. So, I mean, how long did it take you guys to buy into Lunella as a character? I guess what I want to come around to.
I still actually have like one thing that is making me not sure how much I do buy into her. And it's like, there's this weird dissonance where it's clear that she's really inventive and smart, because most kids, any freaking kids at the age of 9, do not, you know, have a good understanding of Kree technology or right. Can make like their own really fancy, like quasi military base under their school. So she obviously, like, is really smart in that way. And one of the main conflicts is, like, all the adults in her life don't understand this. And I assume the school thing is, like, kind of an extension of that narratively. But at the same time, why can't Lunella get into the school for, like, the smart kids? I think she might even have put it like that. Because to me, she has, like, this whole stack of rejection from all the, like, super, super powered smart schools. And I'm wondering, is she as smart as she claims she is, too? So, like, part of me, it's like, obviously this kid is, like, incredibly intelligent. And part of her issue is, like, emotional intelligence, because she's only 9. And she doesn't understand a lot of the stuff that people are actually worried about. But on the other hand, like, if she's this smart, why are the Marvel Universe, like, you know, super smart Reed Richards level schools just rejecting her? And to me, I'm like, well, where does that put Lunella? I don't know. It's like a weird nitpicky thing, but it just kept sticking in my craw for that, like. And I'm like, is she super smart? Is she, like, she's probably not Amadeus Cho level smart, because he's clearly ranked, but, you know, is she someone, like, who we should believe when she's like, I'm the smartest kid?
Yeah, I mean,
they kind of show it, I think, when she can easily answer the questions in the science class. But like you said, Janet, that doesn't show why she is rejected by the schools.
Yeah, my favorite answer. The science class. The teacher asks her something about combustion, and she gives the answer based on what some 14th century guy thought caused like a substance in the air that caused combustion. And I had to look that shit up, and I was like, I love that it's not just she's not just intuitively smart in terms of science. Like, she's obviously done the reading and done her homework too. Mm-hmm. And like that was good, subtle information in there. Sorry to jump in on David, but you brought it up.
No, that's
like,
cool.
I had to add on.
To cool. I mean, no, that's
well, you were saying something.
No, I mean, that's about where I was going with that. I mean, I wasn't going to...
I'm sorry, I totally stole your
point. No, I wasn't going to use that example necessarily. I just... yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, but I mean, you're right, Jen, too. Like, it's a little bit intelligence and context. Like, she is super smart and probably the smartest kid in her school, but where does that place her in, you know, New York City? So that's true. And the other thing is there's a theme throughout this of can't get no respect. Like, Lunella is like the Rodney Dangerfield of smart people. The smart kids in this world. She can get no respect. Which also, it should be said that she is a female protagonist and an African American female protagonist. Or what is she? I don't know if she's African American. I just assume that because on the cover she has quite dark skin, but I should look that up.
I think she is, Andy.
Yeah, I'm gonna make that assumption. Either way, she is definitely a minority person. So there is, it's a good way. This whole can't get no respect thing in terms of her intelligence and getting rejected from the school is a good way to bring in that kind of those themes in a way that will be acceptable for a person who would be of the age range that we think this is targeted toward. Like the frustration at the system and not being able to advance even though you know you're smarter and better than where you are. And that's something that a lot of kids can relate to in terms of a minority status, one way or the other, that they just cannot advance because of some stupid fuck reason. And Lunella cannot get past where she is because of who the fuck knows why. And it's not an answer that she has. It's something that completely eludes her. Which if you were nine, I mean, I'm going to say this as a white guy. I assume most 9-year-old kids don't have that kind of interaction with race to be able to be like, yeah, I'm not getting respected because I'm black. You know?
Well, I mean,
I'm not necessarily
know that that's the reason why.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that's not the reason why they rejected her. And I don't think that would be why in terms of context of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah,
but
I hope not.
No, but the way they framed it in the comic is completely neutral, but will help relate to somebody who's experiencing that in the real world. That frustration in the real world will resonate and relate here in a much more safe way.
Okay. So, like, the adult appeal side of it.
Well, I think, I think in general, like, kids have the, you know, the parents don't understand, you know, like, the Fresh Prince song, parents just don't understand, right? They don't understand why their parents don't go along with whatever they're going on about. Because parents, you know, parents have to balance raising the child with other aspects of life, right? Working or whatever. And maybe Lunella is at some level above her parents. Well, it seems like she might be in terms of her scientific know-how and her engineering skills. But she can't. But because, like Jen said, she doesn't have the emotional maturity or emotional understanding of where her parents are coming from, she sees that as them not understanding or as a rejection of her, you know, her drive to do science.
Mm-hmm.
And then that also occurs in the school. You know, she, because of her intelligence, she stands out amongst the other children and obviously frustrates her science teacher.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the whole thing when you're so far beyond the rest of the class, you're going to underperform because you're fucking bored. Lunella is in this class, and it's science class, so you would think it'd be what she's into, but she's just so fucking bored. Yeah, and you're right, too, about, like, the different kind of intelligence. Like, she is intelligent, but as a 9-year-old, she doesn't have awareness. Like, I really appreciate later on, as the killer folk learn English and become, like, a street gang, but a really brutal street gang, her mother is rightly concerned and, like, starts walking her daughter to school as a safety precaution, or they start walking her to school as a punishment, like, to keep an eye on her, but you get the sense that they also are doing it as a safety precaution. Like, they would be walking her to school at this point anyway. They're just able to ball it up as also a punishment. But Lunella doesn't pick up on that at all. And it's being mentioned around her often enough that she could, if she were paying attention, but that Lunella is also in her head and in her world and is only paying attention to her parents in the context of how they're frustrating her. Which is good character, because that's exactly what this person would do. Which is what I really like about Amy Reeder's writing, and Brandon Montclair, I don't know who did what of what here, but that's really, really good character, and Amy Reeder's great at this too, is the contextual stuff. Like, Lunella feels like she's driving this comic 100%, but there are things that she just does not fucking pay attention to that you get to see, like her parents walking her to school and getting both sides of that. Yeah, so good job, Amy.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the Killer Folk as an antagonist?
I think they were a good introductory antagonist. You know, I think they're a good opposite for Lunella and Devil Dinosaur, because they're kind of generic. And I think if she immediately got like some named Marvel villain, even if it was like Stiltman or something, it would set a precedent, you know.
Yeah.
Because the Killer Folk are a caveman street gang, and any superhero can fight a street gang, and the little twist on them is that they're cavemen, but that's kind of a generic thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're good. They also added some comedy to the story, because they were kind of silly, like, you know, when they ambush the people in the subway station and steal all their clothes and everything.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I thought that was pretty funny. And, mm-hmm. You know, as they kind of took on like a hipster or stereotypical urban youth look, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so that was funny. What's good, you know, I think it helps maintain the tone of this comic. It's not a super serious, grimdark comic, and if it was that kind of comic with a 9-year-old as the main character, I think it would be pretty problematic.
Yeah.
but cavemen who, you know, steal iPods and stuff is the perfect type of villain for a girl and her best friend Dinosaur.
And I like the way it works too. Like, we've mentioned before a couple times, and I think we had the best discussion when we read Wonder Woman: The Circle by Gail Simone, that Wonder Woman just punches Nazis, and that's kind of a letdown. Because so much of the context of a hero is by what they overcome from the villain. And I like the Killer Folk here, because the Killer Folk, you would think being cavemen, like the dichotomy that's set up, you would think would be that Lunella is smart and the cavemen are dumb, but these cavemen are really smart. The Killer Folk learn English in like a day. And they pick up on how to be organized crime and a gang and the importance of money. They pick this up fast. They are obviously really, really smart people. Proto people? Whatever they are, they're really smart, apparently. But they also, and this is why I like it, the Killer Folk are set in their dogma. They could do so much more in this future, and they could be so much more. But they're set in the dogma of the Nightstone and the importance of it and the sacrifice. And even though they're in this new place, they've learned so much, they've adapted so well, they're set in that just like they were against Moon Boy. Whereas Lunella in this comic is constantly confronting herself and adapting and changing and growing. And I love that she had a big character arc that developed her, within 6 issues. Her realization that she, like, she's fighting so hard because she doesn't want to be transformed. She wants to be normal. So then she's forced to become normal and act normal, and she pretends to be normal and then realizes she doesn't want to be normal, and she maybe doesn't want the inhuman gene, but she doesn't want to, like, she has that whole arc in 6 issues, and the Killer Folk don't really change a whole lot. And I love that is the dichotomy that gets up. Because it would be so easy to just make it smart versus stupid. It'd be so easy. But I like
that. And I think that, like, yeah, the fact that... Oh, sorry.
No, go.
I was going to say, I think... I like that they're, like, a local villain. Because if they were some, like, super, you know,
The Green Goblin.
Super, like, a literal supervillain. No, like, even, I mean, Green Goblin, yeah, but even more so, like, you know, like, I don't know, Galactus or something. It just wouldn't make sense because, you know, as a 9-year-old, she's got to go to school and stuff, and the fact that she runs into these guys, like, in the schoolyard or on her way home from school is, it makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she's not sitting there with the police scanner listening for, you know, the bad guys. And she's not going out on patrol because she's not a superhero. And neither is Double Dinosaur. They're buddies, and she's a great engineer. And, you know, she's protecting herself. I mean, think about the conflict she gets in. She protects her mom. She rescues Devil Dinosaur. It's just, you know, it's kind of wacky things, but she's not like stopping a hostage situation or something.
Yeah. Something way above her skill.
Yeah.
You know, I think the killer folk work as well because they're the main antagonists, but they're not the main source of conflict. They're just incidentally there to basically get in Lunella's way and be as obnoxious as possible. Mm. But all her concern is, first, around, I don't want to change. And second, why don't you understand me? Why are you not trying to understand me? And the killer folk are there, I think, to kind of drive the action a little. Like, if you need someone to steal the Kree portal maker thingy or fight Devil Dinosaur, they're a really good answer to that because you can't just have, like, Devil Dinosaur, you know, assaulting the science teacher or Lunella's mom. Yeah. So they work really well to forward the action, but they're also low-key enough that they're not the center of the conflict. And honestly, Lunella is kind of like, she doesn't care about them that much. She's like, I have bigger concerns. And you wouldn't get that if she was like fighting Dr. Doom or something, right? Yeah. Because then the conflict would have to center around this antagonistic villain rather than like the problems that Lunella is experiencing as a child, like on the brink of, you know, leaving young childhood and moving into like that pre-adolescent phase. And then also just like as someone who's like clearly not fully developed their social skills. So, I think you need an enemy like the killer folk where they're just like easily dismissed.
You know, now that I think about it, she kind of, they don't come into conflict with her. She comes into conflict with them because she's trying to get the Nightstone from them. They don't really, they would rather run away from Devil Dinosaur than try to fight him.
Yeah.
But because Lunella's trying to, you know, she's trying to get the same thing, so they end up coming into conflict.
Yeah, and I think you're right, David, too. Like, I mean, you could bring in Galactus, and it could contextually work. Like, it could be kind of funny, like Devil Dinosaur runs up and bites him in the toe or something. I mean, you could keep it age-appropriate for being the World Eater. But then you have to, that also, and what Jen was saying, too, like, it all kind of also circles back to the barrier to entry as a new reader. You'd have to know who the fuck Galactus is. You know, and then the story of also focuses on, like you were saying, Jen, why the fuck is Galactus here? Like, or anyone, like Hobgoblin or whatever, like why, or Dr. Doom, like you said, like, what the fuck is Dr. Doom doing in New York, and why is nobody else here, and really Lunella, and then also, and then you get into the trick of power level kind of stuff too, like, okay, well, Dr. Doom is this kind of power level, takes on the Fantastic Four, so obviously Lunella can't beat him single-handedly. Ooh, but we let Squirrel Girl beat him. You know, like, then you get into that whole, you don't need that here. that would just kind of bog this down, and the Killer Folk don't bog this down at all. You're right, they move the plot forward really, really well. So, yes.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the depiction of parents in this?
Oh my god, I have a serious question.
Okay.
So, well, it's not serious, but like, her parents, I totally get the like, you're young, enjoy your life, or we're going to walk you to school from now on because you've been ditching class. That's all good. But at one point, they openly acknowledge that they've been letting her roam around New York City after dinner, like, dicking around looking for lost technology. Yeah. What the hell? She's nine. Like, I get that she's smart, but I don't think being really intelligent warrants, like, a nine-year-old roaming around New York City after dinner in the dark.
I didn't even notice that.
Because they were, you know, when they, like, ground her or whatever, they're like, and no more going out after dark and, you know, gallivanting around the city. They acknowledge that they know that she's doing it, and it was something that was allowed, as opposed to her sneaking out. And that just, like, that reframed them from, like, oh, these parents care but don't understand, to, like, what the hell are these people doing?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it that way, because I'd assumed she just always snuck out, and they kind of caught her a couple times. Because they clamp down and start walking her to school after the devil dinosaur makes the front page with her on the newspaper. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, yeah, clamp this shit down now. But yeah, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I missed that part too.
They really are delinquent parents.
Yeah, it's just weird because they're so overprotective in some parts, and then it's like they seem to allow her like a crazy amount of freedom in others.
Yeah, that was the discussion.
It could just be oversight. I don't know.
That was the discussion I was thinking we would have. Not to like be like, this is why I brought this up, but I'm interested in the depiction of her parents here because they obviously understand that she's smart, and I think you're right. They do give her lots of freedoms, and they try to be as understanding as they can be. Like, they waited until she was on the cover of the newspaper with a dinosaur to clamp down. I don't think they know she has a lair in the underground of the school, but they obviously know that she's really gifted and really smart, and they're trying to encourage it, but they also, I think just like I will, if my daughter is super smart, like, want her to have a normal, fun life and friends. Like, Lunella doesn't have fucking friends, you know? And there's something kind of sad about her life too before this. Like, she's obsessed with the fact that she's going to be transformed, but through this obsession and through her intelligence, she doesn't, like, she's obsessed with something that she doesn't have. And her parents just want her to have that first before anything else. And I think her parents would be okay if she went to them and was like, you know, I tried this normal thing, and I don't know if it's for me. Like, mm-hmm. I think they would respect that if she had that realization and was able to level with them, but she can't get herself to that ground zero. Like, they're trying to push her down, it feels like, but I think they're trying to make her realize, like, come on, just try being normal. Just give it a shot. You haven't. You're nine.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like, aside from the whole running around New York at night part, they are responding pretty normally. You know, they're like, you'll grow out of this, you know, just try to make friends. They acknowledge she's smart. They understand that she's trying to get into these schools, and they seem very supportive of it. And they kind of do the standard, like, you know, how was your day? Have dinner together type thing. And, like, they seem generally like good parents who have a very precocious child, and they just, it's kind of like, what can you do with a kid who's a loner? Because some people, I think, just, like, that's their personality. It's clearly Lunella's, but they want her to be happy, so they just try to encourage her. And she's nine, so I totally get their protectiveness of her.
Yeah.
Like, she's a little kid. The only thing is just, like, there's some degree of permissiveness there also that didn't make sense to me in that context, because that was the only, like, thing that made me say, oh, these aren't perfectly normal parents, because everything else, I don't know, it all seems pretty reasonable to me. When you're nine, like, it's an unfortunate fact that you don't get too much respect, but her parents do acknowledge that she's smart.
Yeah, I think they do give her more respect than most people would give a nine-year-old.
Yeah. I think her science teacher's a dick.
I think her science teacher's not that smart. Or I don't know, I just, I think...
I don't think it... I don't think it's that the science teacher isn't smart. It's that she is not. She's a science. She's an elementary school science teacher, not Reed Richards, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. she hasn't teach to the common, not the common denominator, but to the most common education level of the classroom, and she has to do it in a way that seems interesting enough for a class of 8 and 9 year olds. Like I in my head, I go to the frame where she's just like combustion with her arms out, and there's like a she's finally like lit a flame or whatever, but the classroom on or the school is on fire or some shit. I don't even remember what the exact frame was, and it comes off as really comedic and bumbling. But like, yeah, if you're a 9 year old classroom science teacher, like you got to get these kids interested in shit, and that just means being over the top. And it comes off as bumbling, but I guess it is in the context of the elementary school, it makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally get the Bill Nye approach where you're, like, all flashy about it, because they're kids, right?
Yeah.
But what startles me is she seems almost as mean to Lunella as the bullies that Lunella meets in the bathroom. And I'm like, lady, you clearly have a gifted kid in your class, like... Just take 2 seconds to talk to her and be like, I acknowledge that this is way below your level, but everyone else needs to learn it, and if you want to do extra credit here. Like, it's not that hard to, like, not bully your students.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of got the sense that she's done that, and I think Lunella is... I think Lunella is so frustrated that if this teacher did have that conversation, I think maybe like this teacher did have that conversation, Lunella's going to rebuff it. Like, Lunella's going to be frustrated and pissed. And I think their relationship is unfortunately naturally antagonistic between the teacher and the student, which sucks for both of them. But I think that's kind of realistic.
I guess the way I see it is that I do think Lunella is kind of a pretty big asshole, but she's 9. So completely excusable because she's 9. And I'm not saying like, oh, it's cool to let your kid be a dick, but she obviously has not yet developed the social skills or the understanding of like the general way things work in society to understand this. And that means it falls on the teacher.
Yeah. It's hard to rail on the character faults of a 9-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys want to talk about the art at all, or should we just move into rating this?
Let's talk about the art.
All right, what do you got?
Because I really like Devil Dinosaur and his facial expressions.
Yes! Yes.
Right, like, you just... The eyes are so well done. Like, he says nothing except some weird grunts, but you can completely see what he's saying through the art, and I love it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all I had.
My favorite bit of this art, and I put it in the notes, is her hero costume. It's so bad. It's like roller skates and goggles. I know. And that's why I love it, because it's so bad, but it's so perfect. Because, like, that cousin I was talking about who's 8 who would love this comic, that's what her fucking super costume would look like, too. Like, go into the closet and find the most ridiculous, brightest colored shit you can. And call it a costume. And it's perfect, and it works. And it when she's in the costume and like building stuff on top of the light post while the devil dinosaur is fighting the killer folk, and she's like making, what did she make, like a jetpacky kind of thing? I don't even remember. But in the costume and doing that, she came off as like as like a younger, kind of cooler Inspector Gadget.
Yes. Oh, she has the little helicopter that comes out of her backpack. That's it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I got the Inspector Gadget vibe.
And the like, stilt things that come out of her roller skates, too.
Yeah. I like the character design here, because I like the character design when she's just a kid, too. But then when she gets her superhero outfit, that just also makes even more perfect sense.
It's cool that she embraces the Moon Girl name, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And her t-shirt has the moon on it.
Yeah. And I think that ties in with her embracing the fact that she doesn't want to be normal. Like, she fights against that nickname, and it's what the bullies call her. But then she turns around, and when she realizes that she doesn't want to be normal and screw this, like, that's when she also embraces the nickname. All right, ready? Rate it?
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, David, you go first.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm on the spot now. You know, this is just... It's a fun... enjoyable read. I can't really find any faults with this, but it's not like capital L literature comic. So I'm going to give it a 4, which I think is pretty, it's a pretty good score.
Yeah.
It's just an enjoyable read, and it's got fun characters. And I definitely want to read more because I want to know. I want to know if Lunella ever gets into one of the smart schools.
Yeah, that's true. Or if she eventually just like, fuck it, I don't need them.
Yeah.
I don't need you. I'll be awesome on my own in my lair.
So I'm going to give it a 4, yeah.
All right. Jen?
3.5. And for me, the problem with this comic is, like, engagement versus retention. So, like, I enjoyed it while I read it. I don't see myself buying more. Like, I want to know, but I also don't necessarily feel, like, engaged enough in Lunella as a character. And I don't think that's any fault of the writing. I just feel like there's kind of a lack of relation between, like, the types of characters I want to read and a 9-year-old girl. So, I don't know. Like, it's really well done. I just don't think it's a 4-gen type of comic, but I also don't veer towards the more goofy cape comics either. But yeah, 3.5.
I'm gonna give this a 4. I'm debating a 4.5, but I'm gonna settle on a 4. My biggest problem is the whole, what is, like, who is this for? The Terrigen Mist thing and the barriers to entry make it difficult for me to recommend it as, like, a book to give somebody that it would be perfect for, like the niece I was talking about. And also thinking about there's two different kinds of comics that I buy, that I consume from Marvel. There's comics that I read in Marvel Unlimited. And I'm perfectly fine to read them there and continue reading them there, and I'll read most of the run there. And then there's comics that I read on Marvel Unlimited and like to buy because I will want to read them later, or I want to make sure I have them for when my children grow up. And Ms. Marvel is in that second category. I have Kamala Khan because I think she's a great book. And she has the same Terrigen Mist thing, too, in her book. So in that book, that's not enough of a barrier for me to put off buying it, but I don't feel like I need to buy this one. Even though, I mean, we didn't even talk about, there's a great theme in this here too about fighting your future. Like, Lunella has a fear of what she will become or what she will not become. She, there's the part of the identity in there, but she's also afraid of the unknown before her. She's comfortable with who she is and where she is, and comfortable with her being a loner, and she does not know what she will transform into and if she will lose the intelligence that she values. And that's something I think kids have, especially in a, Jen, you were saying 12-year-olds, it's quite the transitional age. They'll have a fear of the future. And that's something to identify with in this comic book that makes it useful for a lot of that stuff. But it's not as prominent of a theme. I don't know. Like, it's great, but I won't be buying it. I don't know. I can't put my finger exactly on why, but it doesn't hit that barrier for me. So yeah, 4. But I really like it, and I'm going to keep reading the hell out of this thing on Marvel Unlimited. 4. All right, that's it for this week. Next week, we are going to read Doctor Strange, Way of the Weird by Jason Aaron. This actually started in 2015, but we're going to cheat because most of the volume came out in 2016, and the trade paperback itself came out in 2016 as well. So that's Doctor Strange. After that, we're going to switch to some DC Best of 2016, do New Superman by Gene Yang and Superwoman by Phil Jimenez. I don't know that those are actually the best of DC, but they're the ones we want to read the most that were also well received. So we're kind of cheating there. We have 278 previous episodes, 279 previous episodes, I think. I don't know. I can't count. If you want to hear any of them, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the button that says past shows, and that's there. And also, we have the next, like, 2 months planned out, too. So if you click on future shows, you can see what we have coming up. So we got after Superwoman and after that series, all kinds of good stuff coming up. If you would like the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Support us. Any amount you can give would be super appreciated. And if you give anything at all, even a penny, you get access to bonus episodes that come out about once a month. Just the stuff we talk about before and after the recording ends. Before the recording ends? Before the recording starts and after the recording ends. So yeah, go to patreon.com and support us. And
people, other podcasts to listen to, ask people to go onto iTunes and leave a review. I don't have iTunes installed, but if we start getting reviews, I'll install it and read that review for you. Because I don't use iTunes. We might even, I don't even know what reviews we have on there. There are probably like shitty one-star reviews. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, Doctor Strange, Way of the Weird by Jason Aaron. Until then, everyone, goodbye.
Goodbye.